Welcome to Sports Business Secrets. I'm your host, Kevin Tarka. This podcast is specifically designed to share secrets from experts in the sports business world to help you along your own path to success in this industry. Each episode is packed with lessons and insights that never expire. You'll hear from general managers of professional teams to CEOs of sports tech companies to agents, coaches, players, and everything in between. I invite you to join me in real time on my personal journey of representing players and coaches, traveling the world, and always finding a way to battle through obstacles in this competitive industry. Happy Sunday. It is September 17th, and we are officially closer to October than we are to August, which is pretty crazy. To double down on that statement, the last time I was in the States was late July, so that's even more crazy. But yep, this is the life I choose and the life that I'm lucky enough to be living. So we're just rolling with the punches here. So what is the latest? What am I doing today? What have I been up to? What's up next? So since the last check-in, as you know, I was in Manila for the World Cup, the 2023 FIBA World Cup. Phenomenal ending. Obviously, I would have loved to see USA win, but I'm not too surprised that they ended up losing in the semis. It was just too close of competition. The other teams were just too good. It wasn't an automatic U.S. win like a lot of people thought, although the roster was really talented, and I thought that, you know, they had a chance to win, but I wasn't too surprised that they lost in the semis. But just a few takeaways from that event. If you follow me on LinkedIn, then you've already seen some of these, but just to recap, a couple of takeaways. First of all, organization. I thought the organizing cities, for the most part, generally speaking, did an amazing job. You know, I know how much work goes into producing and managing an event, typically a role that's overlooked and unapplauded and underpaid. So congrats and thank you to those who organize it. I thought they did a really, really good job. Second thing is that it was very competitive. As I mentioned, there's just a lot of good teams in that event because there's a lot of good basketball players and they don't just come from the United States anymore, which has been the case for a while. But the gold, silver, and bronze winners from last World Cup, which was 4 years ago, didn't make it past the second round of this event. And one didn't even qualify, actually, for this event. So it just goes to show that there's high turnover and talent is everywhere. And that makes most games competitive and unpredictable, to be honest. And I'm sure, you know, I don't know if you can call this parity just yet because it's not top to bottom that all the teams are close and you never know who's going to win. Cause there's definitely, let's say a tier A and a tier B, maybe even a tier C of those countries that, that are struggling or just don't typically have the talent that the upper echelon have, but working towards it. And overall it was a competitive event. I just kind of touched on in that post that just a wake up call, right? Like, If you think that USA is the powerhouse and the only powerhouse, you're obviously very incorrect in thinking that, because not only the fact that Germany just won the World Cup, but players from outside the States have been and will continue to migrate to the NBA. And it's a very simple why, because they're very good at basketball and they're good enough to where they're sought after from the best league in the entire world. Yes, the NBA is still the best league in the entire world. That comes from many variables, but that also stems from being the league that can pay the most. So that doesn't mean that there are not other leagues and other talented players that get high contracts. That just means that, generally speaking, if you're the best in the world, you go to the NBA, and that league happens to be in the States. But obviously Team USA is not the only squad bringing a roster full of NBA players, because I'm pretty sure, don't quote me on this, but a team like Canada has, I don't even know if they had a player that was not on an NBA roster, at least the guys that hit the court and that played. So yes, USA is still one of the best teams in the world. No question about it. Of course, there's room to improve. But also I think it's worth noting, not as an excuse, but simply as a fact, is that, and a lot of people would agree, sure, there are other higher level, let's say elite tier NBA players that could have been on the roster. You've probably seen that in the past couple of days with KD and LeBron and some of these types of guys, and, you know, even Kyrie and some other elite players saying, hey, like, we're ready to roll for the Olympics. Just a thing. USA has always chose to send the best players to the Olympics instead of the World Cup. There's many reasons for it. It is what it is. But I'm not going to get into that here. It's just a fact. And the other thing that, that I did mention that's worth noting, again, not an excuse. I think it's on all the players that are there and the coaching staff and just basketball in general to update the rules to a global stance to where everybody plays with the same rules. But yeah, FIBA rules are very different than NBA rules. They just are, right? So that was a little bit difficult for guys to adjust to, but it should, obviously is not an excuse to say that because of the rules, they didn't win. That's obviously not by any means what I'm trying to say, but just things worth noting, and that I think is worth a conversation for the global game of basketball. Why there's different rules at high school, college, NBA, and FIBA, just in general. Why they're not all the same in terms of 3 second calls and where you if you're allowed to play the ball on the rim and how many fouls you get before you foul out and the length of the 3-point shot and what was the other one that just had? Oh yeah, playing quarters versus halves. Like, there's no reason that it should be different, especially from the high school and college level and up. So, those are just a few thoughts I had. A couple other notes that I did not mention in the LinkedIn post, just to kind of finalize my thoughts on the World Cup. I thought FIBA could improve a few things. One, ticket prices. Now, coming from the States, I should not be the one to complain, and this is not a complaint, but just more of a observation. Relatively speaking, when you're coming from the States, everything else outside is at a discount. Food, accommodation, travel for sure. But I think from a business angle, FIBA messed up here. Most games were nowhere near full, or sold out. Obviously, it's difficult because there were, I don't even know how many games, dozens and dozens and dozens of games. But of course, in the media, you see some of the stadiums full, like any one-off event. The TV production does a great job of always showing, the right angles. But I think that other than the fact that they missed out on having a crazy environment, I think they missed out on some revenue too. Like, you're going to see the headlines of opening night, the Philippines playing Dominican Republic when I was in, that was when I was in the first round in Manila. There's like a, I think I'm pretty sure it was a world record to date of how many fans were at a single game in the World Cup. It's like 25,000 or something crazy. Don't quote me on that. But and of course, Championship Day was great. I'm sure you saw some of the pictures that I posted. But I really think overall, and again, maybe I'm completely wrong here, but why they put the pricing structure the way it was, I think they missed out. So most games had general admission, which was $9, $10, $11, $12, depending on where. I think I went to one in Jakarta that was $8, and one in Manila that was $11. But outside of that, then they had like a bunch of different tiers. So the next one was like $20 to $30 ish, and that was like 4A and 4B, which was right below that general admission. And then you had like the $35, $45, $50 tickets, and then you had like $150 tickets, and then you got up to $300, and I'd have to double check towards the beginning of the event, but I know, I mean, towards the end of the event, especially in Manila around the Final Four, I mean, there was $500 tickets easy. Now, obviously, there was people who bought those, of course, but why not have the place packed and charge $25 or $50 or something where you're gonna sell out every game, especially being in Manila in the Philippines, where I mean that you would sell out or close to sell out almost every game. There was just thousands of people outside the arenas that would have loved to go in. They just couldn't afford it, because the general admission tickets were including me, by the way, were sold out. And then you have these $100 tickets for sale. It's like, I don't know. That was just an observation I had for so many games in a big event. I understand if it's one, if it's a one-off or championship, but anyways, that was my feedback on that. Next thing is merch. I thought they did a poor job with this, and maybe there's a reason for it, but I was actually thinking about getting something, but the choices were extremely limited, and the gear, in my personal opinion, was horrible. The only thing I saw at the arenas were shirts. I think maybe there was basketballs for sale too, but there were shirts. and it had like this weird ugly stripe around the neck part, and it was not great material, and it was very expensive. I think they were like $40, something like that. Again, don't quote me exactly, but I just remember seeing them game after game, being like, that's, I don't know, that it's not what I was used to for merch. For example, if you go to an NBA game, or even some college games, or even some overseas, some other games overseas, I thought they did a poor job. Now, regardless of my opinion about the shirts, that was it. There was no jerseys. That was a huge swing and a miss. Huge swing and a miss. And again, maybe there was a reason. Maybe they couldn't negotiate those royalties or image rights or whatever types of contracts they needed with each federation or each team. Not quite sure there, but the fact that fans could not buy a Karl-Anthony Towns jersey or a Luka Doncic Slovenia jersey, that was a huge swing and a miss, because you're in a market like the Philippines. Again, I keep going back to that, where it's the biggest basketball fan base outside of the States for the NBA. I mean, you can't walk on the street without seeing people in an NBA jersey. So you figured it would be a time to have some of the biggest basketball stars in the world be able to sell their merch in that market. So those were a couple other feedbacks that I had about the event. Again, overall, great experience. But that's it for the World Cup. That brings us to today. Yes, I'm still in Abu Dhabi. It wasn't really a planned one, but one thing led to another, and I am here. And I needed a place to lay over for a bit, because I wanted to take a couple days of relaxing, which hasn't really happened yet. But I'm on my way to visit Donovan in Azerbaijan, and I'd never been here, so that's pretty much how it worked out. Obviously, a lot to dive into regarding the sports business market here. I have not ventured to Dubai yet. Hopefully, I'll get a chance to do that before I leave. But let's see how things shake out the next couple of days. Obviously, a lot to dive into there, and tough to do everything in a couple of days in any city, regardless of where you are. But briefly, like I mentioned again yesterday in my post on LinkedIn, the emerging sports business landscape in the Middle East in general, let alone UAE, is just really fascinating. Obviously, you have things like European soccer clubs that have been bought by venture capital firms or funds from the Middle East. You have events that were hosted here, like the FIFA World Cup in Qatar recently, and the craziness of LIV Golf. But specific to the UAE, there's a lot going on, right? And it's clear that sports are a priority, because they recently approved what they call a National Sports Strategy 2031, which has a bunch of new initiatives. There's like 15 or 20 initiatives that include things like having more support for elite athlete development, upgrading their sports education methodology, the way that they teach athletes, increasing their talent scouting, and just and their facilities. There's a lot of really interesting things in there. And then one initiative that I mentioned that stuck out in particular to me was to th their goal to increase the proportion of people practicing sports in the entire population to 71%. That is insane. I'm not sure the exact details. I have to dive in a little bit deeper, which I'm gonna go over, and I'm gonna have an episode for itself here this week. I don't know if that means somebody riding a bike outside for 10 minutes counts as that, but 71% of the population engaging in sports is fantastic. So obviously a very exciting future for sports here in the United Arab Emirates. And once I dive into that sports strategy document a little bit further, I'm gonna break it down this week. So have an amazing day, and we'll see you back here tomorrow. Thanks again for listening, my friends. If you enjoyed the episode, or if it brought you any value at all, it would mean the world to me if you could give it a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts. If you share it on social media, make sure you tag me at Kevin Tarka. If there are any topics that you want me to dive into, or any guests you'd love for me to have on the show, just shoot me a message and I will do my best to make it happen. Have an amazing day, and hope to see you back here soon.